This is Fuse Tea in 3D. Mouth-watering fruit, perfectly fused with botanicals and tea. Serve yourself a little me time with Fuse Tea. Listen to our ASMR Mind Tingles podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 442 podcast, where we'll be taking an in-depth look at some of the biggest features in the latest edition of our magazine and tackling all that's worth talking about in the world of football. I'm James Brown, editor-in-chief of the magazine, and joining me today to delve a little deeper into his Man City piece is writer and Man City fan Steve Anglesey.
Hello.
And joining Steve and I is the writer and biographer of Jurgen Klopp, Ralf Honigstein.
Hello.
And a Bayern Munich fan, we should say as well. I'm not a Liverpool fan.
It's worse than that. I'm a member.
Pardon?
I'm a member of Bayern Munich.
Oh, okay.
Not a fan.
Are you a member of Man City?
I don't even know what that means. What does it mean to be a member of Bayern Munich?
Well, Bayern Munich, unlike other clubs which are owned by oligarchs and sheikhs and so on, is actually still controlled by their members. The members vote in the president and vote them out if they don't like him.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Democracy, that wouldn't happen.
It'll never catch on.
If you dared bring that up at Man City, you'd be beheaded.
in City Square, possibly.
There goes the Aguero interview. Right, anyway, Steve, you've done, it's my favourite new section we've introduced in the magazine, the best and worst feature, which is a chance for a fan who's also a writer to reflect on the best and worst of the club's past.
Yes, and it would have been a few years ago, it would have been the worst and worst. And
so,
now,
obviously, your first choice as best manager ever is Guardiola.
Yes.
What's he brought to Man City?
Well, I mean, calm, authority, which I think are two words that are not really... I've never really been associated with Manchester City. Even when we won even after the money came and we won the league titles, you wouldn't associate either of those two titles with, you know, the second one was a sort of Liverpool helped by collapsing. The first one obviously was the chaos of the final day. The other trophy, the FA Cup and the League Cups that were not really won in a convincing way. And there's something about Guardiola, isn't there, that just exudes this thing. He's got a plan, and I think that there is, you know, in business and in journalism, the managers that I've responded to most have been, you know, they've not been people who shouted at you and made you scared. Occasionally you know you do respond to that and you're determined to prove people wrong. But there's something about him, a quietness and a calm, and he talks about calm a lot. He's able to get his point of view across in a very direct way. There is a sort of series of defined expectations which people meet, and I think, you know, his record in developing players is also great. You know, I think the way he's developed Sterling has been fantastic. He's helped Sterling to fulfil his potential. But even somebody like Otamendi, who when he arrived was reckless, and I'm saying this and I now know that he will ruin the end of the season by diving in various games. But the way that he's developed a player like that, you know. So he's easily the best manager that I have seen for those reasons.
Rafa, is calm a word you'd associate with the subject of your book?
No, I wouldn't associate it with Guardiola either. I
think he's
absolutely hysterical. And
I mean, the book's called Bring the Noise.
Yeah, I mean, that's Klopp, obviously. But I think they have some similarities. But the football looks different.
Yeah.
I think Manchester City's football and level of excellence exudes a calmness.
That's what I'd, calm.
I think Guardiola is actually very intense, more intense than Klopp, who I think is off the pitch and perhaps increasingly on the pitch. I mean, on the sidelines, a little bit calmer, but certainly used the energy and used that kind of firebrand management style, you know, management by hand grenade almost to light up a place.
Is that your description of him or his own?
I think I've nicked that from Henry Winter about, he wrote about Diego Simeone once, or maybe it was Jose, but I'm not original enough to come up with stuff like that. But
just briefly about the title, Bring the Noise.
Yeah.
Is he a Public Enemy fan or are you?
It's me, yeah.
Okay.
I am, yeah.
Great title.
Thank you very much.
And what interests me about both clubs right now is they both have waited in a certain respect. Now, obviously, as soon as Man City got the money, they splashed out 50 million straight away on a player, which was a phenomenal amount. The player didn't know which club in Manchester he was going to. And there's been a lot of talk about the money, but they waited until they could get Guardiola and have him. And the same with Liverpool at the moment. They didn't wait for Klopp, but they've been waiting whilst he's been there and gradually getting better and better each year. I mean, there was a period, maybe a year into his management, when some of the fans seemed to get a little bit disaffected, and maybe he wasn't doing that much better than Rodgers. But actually, overall, Liverpool are in a better place now, aren't they?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, they've become competitive for the biggest trophies in European and club football again, which was certainly not the case in 2015, where they had really lost themselves. They were mediocre, they were mid-table. They were going to places like Real Madrid playing the second team because they thought we were going to get beaten anyway. All the sort of things that if you're a supporter of Liverpool, you just think this is totally unacceptable. And, you know, Klopp still hasn't won anything, but the reason why the people above him and the fans have bought into him is because they can all see where this is going. They can see players being improved. They can see the team getting better and better in terms of results. They can see the team going deep into European competition for the third time in three attempts. He's never not made it to a final of a European competition with Liverpool, which is pretty good going. And, you know, especially with Liverpool, more so than at City, the cult of the manager is so strong. And he's been able to live up to that. In a sense that I don't think anyone since Rafa Benitez has been able to do. And with him, it seems to be more sustainable because the club, independently of him, is set up in a much more sustainable way. And they absolutely love him because they feel that they can trust him with the money. You know, it's not so much that they weren't prepared to pay big or they were waiting on certain things. It's because they trust Klopp to spend the money wisely, that we now see Liverpool making the kind of moves that we haven't seen from them over the last 10 years or so.
Can I just, somebody asked you just before we started there, there was a lot of rumours that Klopp was going to come to the Premier League. Did he have a preferred team before he was hired by Liverpool? Was there, in the process of researching your book, did you come across any evidence that there was a team that he wanted to join?
Like many people in Germany, I think he had a natural affinity with Liverpool because Liverpool has always been the second team for a lot of Germans, especially of his generation. You know, if you have some kind of vague idea of English football, then Liverpool would have been the first team that comes up in the 70s and 80s. Now, whether that went beyond that and actually came down to him saying, you know, Premier League, only Liverpool for me, I think that would be putting it too strongly. And also ignore the realities of management, which is really what is available to you. You know, he had an interview with Man United a year before. It got quite far. He was very tempted to take the job. Ultimately, he wasn't ready to leave Dortmund, and ultimately he didn't believe in the vision put forward to him by Ed Woodward, who sold the club to him as an adult version of Disneyland, and Klopp didn't find that so sexy.
Is that a quote?
Yes.
That sounds quite good to me, an adult version of Disneyland.
You know, Klopp, if somebody described Manchester City as that, you wouldn't join that. Have you been to Disneyland?
Maybe if it was in Salford, it's probably... Yeah, but you don't go to Disneyland for the food, do you? Anyway.
It didn't quite feel right to him.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be slightly disingenuous to say, you know, he's always just waiting for Liverpool. But the people around him and the people who saw what he did at Dortmund and saw what he did at Mainz, two clubs that do play, you never walk alone before the games.
Okay.
And have made it a habit to create that energy with the whole city and the crowd. They understood that Liverpool, as an idea, would be a perfect fit for him.
Yeah.
But it still came down to timing and all these things that you needed to make it happen.
Moving on to the title running now, Steve. I just did an estimate on the way in of how many points I think each team would get. And I had
fed it into the supercomputer.
The supercomputer that is my brain.
Yes.
As I rushed from the tube station late to the room where we're recording this. And I estimated that Man City would get 12 or 13 points.
Right.
And that Liverpool would get 13. What's your take on how it will go?
Well,
This is what I thought. I thought Man City would beat Palace, maybe draw with Tottenham, beat Man United, beat Burnley, lose to Leicester, beat Brighton.
Lose to Leicester?
Yeah, because I think that there's always, at this time of the year, there's always an unexpected result. And people often think the unexpected result comes out of actually, an expected result is a team fighting against relegation. That is actually, in a way, an upset is expected. But I think that maybe Leicester can still beat a team. And they were the ones that I picked there. I mean, it might be Palace. I can't see Burnley turning over Man City.
We've struggled with Leicester. We've also struggled with Palace. You know, yeah. I mean, I think
they're actually good football teams.
Yeah, they are good football teams. And, you know, Leicester are having a bit of a spurt, aren't they, with
Rodgers. That's why
with Klopp's predecessor. I would look at United as well. Who's, you know, that will be when they get beaten by Barcelona, and Manchester United fans can enjoy this on Twitter after they dramatically beat Barcelona. But once they've been knocked out by Barcelona, that will be their cup final, won't it? That will be all that Manchester United have got to play for. I thought that the start of the season, because it was because of the players that Liverpool had bought, because of the fact that it's following a World Cup and always weird and hinky things happen after a World Cup. I thought Liverpool would win the league, and I still think Liverpool will win the league. So
is that a default sort of, what is that like, betting against your team?
Pessimism, betting against your team. No, I did think Liverpool would win the league, and I thought that City might have a deeper run in the Champions League, and maybe that will happen. I don't know after the first leg against Spurs. Liverpool have certainly got a better run in.
Yeah,
I thought they might
draw against Chelsea and then perfectly capable of winning the other four games.
And they
Cardiff, Huddersfield, Newcastle, Wolves. Now, Wolves were the best team there. And watching them last year, totally dominate in terms of style and performance in the Championship. I would listen into phone-in shows at the start of this year and hear West Ham fans struggling to get a point on the board after five games, saying, we got Wolves next week, so we should win that. Not a clue. They were so well set up last year. And then the team after them last season that have maintained it this year with Sheffield United, who are a very good team.
I think if you go in game by game,
I don't think any of those others, maybe Newcastle for Liverpool, maybe Rafa Benitez might cause an upset, but I don't think they've really got the players to do that this year. So Chelsea and Wolves are the only two there, but I think they could draw Chelsea or Wolves and win the others.
Well, quite easily. I mean, Southampton, I thought, would be the one where Southampton away, I thought, would be the one that Liverpool would stumble against. And, you know, they've developed a habit of they've not been playing particularly convincingly. But, you know, late goals, late, you know, gifts in a way, the Lloris thing, you know, there's been a sort of a pattern. They've just found a way to win, haven't they? And so, you know, I'm not going to change from Liverpool. But obviously I'd be delighted if it was the other way.
What do you think, Rafa? You're frowning.
That's just my natural expression. I thought City have not looked as if they might drop any points since the Newcastle game. And I don't think they have domestically. So I still think that there's a way of, the way they do win their games looks almost so, or has looked almost so effortless.
They've done a couple in second gear easily.
Yeah, that it's hard to think that they will drop too many more points.
You don't think they'll drop any points?
Well, they haven't dropped any points since
they lost on
the beginning of January.
I know it's not in the league, but they lost against Spurs, who were they are going to play again almost immediately.
That is the one thing that is encouraging, I think, for Liverpool to see that game and to see how Guardiola kind of lost it a little bit in a big pressurized game for strange reasons, that you think maybe they might have another wobble. And one game in the league that will count as a wobble and might
the
be
thing,
enough.
The thing about Spurs as well is obviously England fans will be disappointed if Kane misses the summer tournament, but they actually did better the last time he was out for five games.
Well, yeah.
They won all five games. One was in the Champions League, and I think it was against Dortmund, and the other four straight wins in the league with Son just really proving himself a perfectly capable centre-forward deputy.
He plays better when he can play as a striker, Son.
Yes, I agree.
So that might actually...
City are vulnerable to counter-attacks and would rather play against Kane than Son. But still, you don't know what kind of shape Tottenham will arrive at by the time they play.
No.
So, Raph, who do you think will win the league?
Well, unlike Steve, I've tipped City all along. I didn't think that Liverpool would be quite capable to challenge them to this extent. So I'm surprised that Liverpool have been this consistent. I don't think the team was quite ready for it. I'm surprised that City, who've only dropped a little bit compared to where they were last year, I mean, it might be a difference of 6 points, which is really not a lot, have actually opened the door ever so slightly. But it is only a race because Liverpool have been consistent to the point where it's kind of otherworldly. And if there wasn't City up against them, we'd be talking about one of the best teams ever in the Premier League. It doesn't feel like that at the moment because, unfortunately for them, they have City in front of them. But
Steve, are you happy that you're up against Liverpool for the title? Or would you have preferred to be edging ahead of Manchester United rather than leaving them for dust?
Oh, no, I like that. I do enjoy leaving them for dust, yeah. Very much so.
So you prefer that than if they were...
Yeah,
neck and neck with you, and then you won it.
But I've got to say, I enjoyed having a cigar on, you know, in sort of early April last year. That was absolutely delightful. You will know, and obviously you will know as a Bayern fan. It's you know, when people say, "Oh, it's ruined the end of the season," this I thought it was marvellous. You know, nothing to worry about at all. And then, of course, the season was kind of ruined by the terrible performance in the first leg against Liverpool, and then obviously the bizarre Manchester United comeback in the second half of the derby.
With Guardiola at Bayern, it got to the point where you didn't have to watch the games anymore because you knew that Bayern were winning.
Yeah,
and that for hardcore Bayern members, as strange as it sounds, was actually paradise because you could do something else on Saturday.
That's great.
I can't get...
You don't have to worry about it. It's just... The tension is gone. It's lovely.
This is Fuse Tea in 3D. Mouth-watering fruit, perfectly fused with botanicals and tea. Serve yourself a little me time with Fuse Tea. Listen to our ASMR Mind Tingles podcast.
Can't get enough eye-popping, jaw-dropping, heart-stopping reality TV.
It's the best.
Then head to Hey You, home of reality on demand. Stream and download the latest episodes from shows like Keeping Up with the Kardashians and The Real Housewives, same day as the US.
What's more fun than that?
Or binge old faves like The Simple Life and The Hills.
That's hot.
Hey You, reality on demand. Start your 1 month free trial now.
You're listening to the 442 podcast. Don't forget to subscribe through iTunes and Spotify. Okay, I'm going to come on to the piece that you've written for the latest issue of 442. And now we got this in because I realised once I'd looked through everything that was in, that we had no Man City, which seems not given how well they're doing. And I gave you a call and I said, would you write a list of the best and worst things that's happened? It's a great piece, Steve. It's
thanks.
It's really set the tone, and we've had four or five others submitted by writers now, but it's a great template. It's basically an opportunity, I think, for a fan to have a little bit of fun and name the highs and the lows of being a fan of a club. So I'm going to just pick you up on a few of them. Away day food. I should explain. Basically, there's a list of subjects, and Steve has picked his best and worst. Away day food, Wembley Box Park.
Well, I like the Wembley Box Park. I think it's a good new invention.
Okay.
I think it
is. Can you explain what it is to people who haven't been there?
So it's on Wembley Way. It's on the right hand side of Wembley Way. When you play at Wembley, you are either designated with the box park or with not. So I didn't have an opportunity to go there on Saturday because Brighton had it.
And what is it? Is it containers?
It's a huge container full of street food. Yeah. Yeah. So it's for people who are used to Wembley hot dogs and long queues and long waits, which actually has got quite a lot better. The fan experience inside the stadium is much better. The food experience is still pretty disappointing.
But your worst is Lou Macari's chippy at Old Trafford.
Well, yeah.
Is that just because it's...
for the name alone? Yeah. I don't like the idea of giving Lou Macari, who probably hasn't owned it since the mid 1970s, has he? But I don't like the idea of giving Lou Macari any money.
Okay, nickname. Do you remember what you wrote for this? Best.
The best nickname.
Yes.
What is the best nickname?
Kiki's nickname.
We had a player called Kiki Musampa, and his nickname was Chris Musampa, which I thought was superb. And we also had a player, I think the worst nickname was a guy called Michael Frontsek, who they nicknamed the Fonz. And he didn't look like the Fonz. He was a big bald fella, and he was certainly not cool. He was sent off in his first game for doing something really stupid. I don't think he even had a motorbike.
Okay, quite interesting. Your favourite, well, the best opponent. So not your favourite, but the best opponent.
Yes.
That you chose was an interesting choice. Do you remember who you went for?
Was this the best player?
Best opponent.
The best opponent. Go on, refresh my memory.
To be fair, you did write this 8 weeks ago. Jermaine Defoe.
Well, Jermaine Defoe always seems to score against us. Always, no matter which team he played for. Wayne Rooney also seemed to score against us. That was largely for Manchester United. So I couldn't bring myself to say...
At least everybody always scored against
us. Well, I know. In the old days, everybody always scored against us. But Jermaine Defoe, I reckon, it probably scored 10 or 11 times against us for a variety of different clubs. And was a great player, you know.
And your best cult hero...
My best cult hero.
Yeah.
Did I put Mike Doyle for this?
No, he was hard man. Cult hero.
Cult hero.
Tony Coleman.
Oh, Tony Coleman. Yeah, Tony. So he was a winger in the side that won the league in the late 60s, and they also won the FA Cup and won the League Cup. The Joe Mercer and Malcolm Allison side. And Tony Coleman was...
Do you remember that?
I don't remember any of this, obviously. But
were
I always...
Born
I always
year around that
I
time?
Was born in 1967. So, okay. Yeah, I was born at the start of the season where they won the league. Tony Coleman was great. He had tattooed knuckles, I presume love and hate.
Okay.
But he also had... I think he had sort of... bluebirds on his hands. He had tattooed hands.
Okay.
And the last time I heard anything of Tony Coleman, I think he's still alive, but he went to live in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time that I saw him, he was famously chippy. He'd fallen out with Allison and Mercer and all of these people, and sort of his career had gone downhill. He went to live in Australia. And the last time I saw him was, there was a brilliant interview with him about how much he hated Australia and Australians. And how much he was dying to come back to Britain, which I thought was wonderful. He'd lived there for about 20 years. And he went, I hate it here. I hate Australians. Great.
Fair play. And your worst cult hero was Jamie Pollock.
Yeah, Jamie Pollock was one of those. But you know those people who sort of clench their fist at the crowd and do that and go, come on. And there's absolutely nothing
like
about them.
You're not
them.
Doing your part.
And yes, exactly. You know, come on, and they try and, you know, rabble rouse. But he was a sort of fake cult hero, inexplicably popular. I thought Jamie Pollock, and of course he sort of relegated us, didn't he, in the to the third division. He there was a sort of chip and header that he did in the game against QPR, which sort of put us down in the third division.
Yeah, it was an amazing own goal.
It's one of the great own goals. That the Lee Dixon one, the chip, is amazing. But the sheer stupidity of what Jamie Pollock is doing is just remarkable.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll be pleased. He's a big listener.
Is he?
If But now, coming on to Rafa.
He's quite a big lad now as well, actually.
We will talk more about your book. Okay, now I think the thing with Klopp, Bring the Noise by Rafa Honigstein, is Klopp is one of those managers like Wenger, like Clough, that you, or like Bill Shankly perhaps, that you would probably get over your sort of club loyalties and enjoy reading, because he's an interesting manager who transcends sort of club loyalties. Can you tell me something that I won't know and the reader won't know before they read that they'll get from this? Well, for instance, in the latest issue of 442, the front cover story is by Andy Mitten on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And Andy reveals in there that after every game, Solskjaer meets with Alex Ferguson. And it's only a sentence, it's not a big deal, but I found that fascinating, just to check in and get a bit of instant feedback or maybe a bit of reassurance. What did you find out whilst you were writing and researching this book? Was there anything that really surprised you?
That is the question I always get asked by people who haven't read the book. They just want to go straight to the best bit, you know?
It's not necessarily the best bit, but was there anything that genuinely was a surprise?
I can't tell you about sort of one thing, you know, that he, I don't know, listens to Tibetan monk chants, anything really outstanding in that sense. But what I did find surprising most of all was how hard it was for me to find people who didn't like him, who had even a bad thing to say about him on
See,
the record.
If you joined Manchester United, that would have been a lot easier.
maybe. But I knew that there were plenty of players that he had big fallouts with, and they were shouting at each other. For example, him and Mats Hummels in the last season at Dortmund really did not get on.
Yeah.
And they would often have to be almost separated on the training pitch because fists were about to be flying through the air. But even him, Klopp has a way of departing, of moving on, but the people left behind still feel really close to him, mm-hmm. and really respect him, really like him. And I think that is a very, very unusual thing in football, because even the heroes, even the big stars, you will find almost under any stone someone who will tell you either that they're overrated or they're stupid or they're false, they're liars. You know, it's not difficult to find these people.
But what about his contemporaries?
With him, it was very, very difficult to find anyone. There's one guy who's sort of known for having said something bad about him. And he said to me, look, I'm sorry, but I don't want to go in your book because I'm already known in Germany as the one guy who doesn't like Jürgen Klopp. And actually, it's not personal. I can't tell you. But it's not personal for him. He had a disagreement with him on a footballing level and made that public when he was at Mainz. But didn't want to sort of go back into being the labelled forever as the one number one Klopp opponent.
Can I just ask, after Liverpool, is there a job for him in Germany?
There's any job he wants in Germany.
Really?
Including maybe being the federal president of Germany.
Okay.
And I'm not joking, because it's a representative role. He's not the head of government, that's the chancellor. If you
really,
were to stand
that popular?
Yeah, if he were to stand tomorrow, he'd win, I'm sure. Because he is seen as maybe sort of the biggest German star
that
we have at the moment. He's the guy that everyone likes. Lothar Matthäus the other day was talking about the fact that when he comes off air doing German Sky, doing the Bundesliga, the first question he asks is, you know, what did Liverpool do? Everyone feels that he represents Germany and he represents German football, and everyone looks up to him.
I wonder if it's because he doesn't actually come across like a German.
That is a backhanded compliment if ever I've heard one.
No, I'm joking. But
yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I think with him, it's a function.
Stereotype of Germans is quite austere, serious, very professional, very organised. And he comes across very lively, very passionate, very... just, you know, he'll respond on the spur. You know, and he's like, I think that's why people like him who don't. But then again, just quickly, I want to end on this one last thing. I'm reading a lot of Man United fans saying they'd rather Man City win the league than Liverpool.
Yes, that's quite a common thing in when I go back to Manchester, that's
what they hate.
That's
Liverpool
what
more than they hate Man City.
Yeah, they really hate. Plus, they've seen, you know, they're used to Man City winning the league now, aren't they? So, you know,
yeah, it was when it mattered.
This is something that has happened. Whereas Liverpool, I think they would like to get to the 30 years and beyond, yeah, wouldn't they?
Okay, well, look, it's been great talking to you both, Steve Anglesey. And do you actually write about Man City anywhere else, or are you just...
No, I write about, mostly I write about Brexit now in the New European.
A great publication, I think. And Rafa Honigstein is the author of Klopp Bring the Noise. Thanks for coming in. The latest issue of 442 is out now. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast via Spotify and iTunes. And you can follow us on Twitter at 442. And until next time, goodbye.
This is Fuse Tea in 3D. Mouth-watering fruit, perfectly fused with botanicals and tea. Serve yourself a little me time with Fuse Tea. Listen to our ASMR Mind Tingles podcast.